This is Audible.
Phoenix Audio presents
Postcards from the Edge by Carrie Fisher.
Prologue. Brother Thomas, you know how I always seem to be struggling even when the situation doesn't call for it? Well, I finally found a place where my struggling fits right in. The sunny Middle East. Brooding and moping doesn't seem overdramatic in Israel or Egypt or Turkey. Today I stood in a recently bombed out train station. I looked at the charred, twisted metal and I thought, finally, my outsides match my insides. Maybe I should take a tour of the world's trouble spots and really relax. See you soon. Love, Sister Suzanne. Dear Lucy, okay, here's what I think now. Ready? I have to establish an overall plan for my overboard life. When I cross the finish line of my 20s this fall and that 30 flag goes down, I'd like to be closing in on having some idea of whatever it is that my life is about. Here's what I've come up with so far. A, I'll get back into therapy, maybe with a woman therapist this time. B, I'll stop coloring my hair and dye it back to my normal color. I'll artificially go natural. C, I'll only date people I really like so I can feel like there's some point to it. D, I'll fix the eating thing. E, I'm going to slip my hand out of the comforting clasp of chemicals. No more drugs. Also, get up early every day, read more, keep a journal, talk on the phone less, do less shopping, and eventually have a child with someone. Obviously, the plan is in a really rough early phase, so I'll keep you posted as this thing gets honed down. Honey, I'm honed. Your elfin buddy, S. Dear Gran, yet another offering to add to your collection of my poetic works. Oh, wow, now I've done it. I've made a mess. I feel a fool. I feel obsessed. When we get to the good part, will I have something to wear? I know my heart's in the right place because I hid it there. I act so much like myself, it's a little unreal. It's a lot of work, it's no big deal. My heart's in the right place, ticking away inside my torso. I'm just like other folks, only that much more so. I remind myself of someone I've never met, of someone I'd like to meet, of someone I can't forget. I'm not insane, but I'm halfway there. You can tell from the smoke rising from my molten hair. Follow me down Insight Road, and I'll show you the sights along the way. I'm a flash, and the world is my pan. Have a nice day. Give Grandpa a kiss if he remembers me. This is the kind of vacation I might need a vacation after. I'll call you when I get home. Your ever-loving Suzanne. Postcards from the Edge. Day one. Maybe I shouldn't have given the guy who pumped my stomach my phone number, but who cares? My life is over anyway. Besides, what was I supposed to do? He came up to my room and gave me that dumb stuffed animal that looks like a thumb, and there I was lying in bed 12 hours after an overdose. I wasn't feeling my most attractive. I'd thrown up scallops and Percodan on him the night before in the emergency room. I thought it would be impolite to refuse to give him my phone number. He probably won't call anyway. No one will ever call me again. Day two. I was up all night with my head full of frightening, chattering thoughts walking around and around the halls. After about the sixth spin, I stopped waving at the night nurse and just kept my head down. One of the therapists came in to admit me and asked me how long I'd been a drug addict. I said I didn't think I was a drug addict because I didn't take any one drug. Then you're a drugs addict, she said. She asked if I had deliberately tried to kill myself. I was insulted by the question. I guess when you find yourself having overdosed, it's a good indicator that your life isn't working. Still, it wasn't like I'd planned it. I'm not suicidal. My behavior might be, but I'm certainly not. Tomorrow I get out of detox and start group. I hate my life. Day three. All the therapists here seem to be former addicts. They have this air of expertise. Drug addicts without drugs are experts on not doing drugs. I talked to this girl, Irene, at lunch, who's been here 2 weeks, and she said that in the beginning, your main activity is a non-activity and that you simply don't do drugs. That's what we're doing here, not drugs. The woman who admitted me, Julie, is my therapist. I don't know if I like her or not, but I want to like her. I have to like her because the way she is probably the way I'm going to be. I need to make an ideal of someone who did drugs and now doesn't. Three people here, Carl, Sam, and Irene, have been to prison. We also have Sid, a magazine editor, and Carol, an agent's wife, and several others whose names I'm not sure of yet. Most of them are here for cocaine or freebase, but there's also a sizable opiate contingent. The cocaine people sleep all the time because by the time they get here, they haven't slept in weeks. We opiates have been sleeping a lot, so now we roam the hallways at night, twitching through our withdrawals. I think there should be ball teams, the opiates versus the amphetamines. The opiates scratch and do hand signals and nod out, and the amphetamines run around the bases and scream. There are no real rules to the game, but there are plenty of players. Tomorrow afternoon, after the cocaine videos, the nurse takes everyone who's not in detox on a Sunday outing to the park. Day 4. It was nice being outside. You feel less like you're being punished and more like a normal citizen. It's hard not to feel like an outcast in a drug clinic, but then it's hard not to feel like an outcast, period. I seem to be the only one here who had their stomach pumped. It's an interesting distinction. Carl and I shared a blanket in the park. He's a 55-year-old black groundskeeper and a would-be ex-freebase addict. He looks like a burnt mosquito. I asked him how he could afford to be here, and he said he's on his wife's health insurance. Carl talked so much in the park that I thought I was going to kill myself. His main topic, of all things, was drugs. He talked about cooking up the rock and the feel of the freebase pipe and how he'd make enough money from Tuesday to Friday to freebase all weekend. I asked him what he took to come down, and he said he didn't like downers. He said, shoot, those drugs don't do nothing but constipate me. The fat guy Sid seems really smart. He's in for loads. I asked him what loads were, and his eyes started to shine. When addicts talk about their drug of choice, it's almost transcendental. He said, you've been a downer freak and you don't know what loads are? It turns out loads are 4 strong painkillers combined with 1 weird sleeping pill which produces an effect like heroin, along with a stomach addiction, which Sid had. I can't believe I missed that drug. The weird thing about all this is that I had been straight for months. The whole time I was filming Sleight of Head in London and all through my vacation. But then I got home and boom, 4 weeks of drugs. I hated it. I even wanted to stop, but I just couldn't. It was like I was a car and a maniac had gotten behind the wheel. I was driven and I didn't know who was driving. Day 5. I let Irene cut my hair today. It's kind of horrible. She's only 20 and her skin is all broken out from PCP and heroin. I got so absorbed listening to her stories of blackouts and arrests for prostitution that I didn't notice how badly the haircut was actually going. Julie is so cheerful, I want to punch her. And 2 guys who get out of here next week, Roger and Colin, almost swagger. They've got it all over us because they haven't done drugs in almost a month. They really know how not to do drugs now. Big fish in a little rehab. I feel so agitated all the time, like a hamster in search of a wheel. I'm consumed with panic that everyone will find out about this and hate me or laugh at me or, worst of all, feel sorry for me. Pity me for taking my everything that a human being can possibly be offered and turning it into scallops and Percodan on the emergency room floor. I can see where people would think that my life is great, so why can't I feel it? It's almost like I've been bad and I'm being punished by rewards. This self-indulgent white chick whose inner voice says, look how spoiled you are. Go on, have another great thing. What are you going to do about it, huh? What are you going to do about it? The thing about having it all is, it should include having the ability to have it all. Maybe there are some people who know how to have it all. They're probably off in a group somewhere laughing at those of us who have it all but don't know how to. The positive way to look at this is that from here, things can only go up. But I've been up, and I always felt like a trespasser, a transient at the top. It's like I've got a visa for happiness, but for sadness, I've got a lifetime pass. I shot through my 20s like a luminous thread through a dark needle, blazing toward my destination. Nowhere. Day 6. This is hard. I feel like I've got bugs flying around inside of me. I called my friend Wallace today, and I tried to get the operator to say, collect call from hell, will you accept the charges? After not feeling anything for years, I'm having this feeling festival. The medication wears off and the feelings just fall on you. And they're not your basic fun feelings either. These are the feelings you've been specifically avoiding, the ones you almost killed yourself to avoid, the ones that tell you you're something on the bottom of someone's shoe, and not even someone interesting. I talked to my agent and ended up in tears, which is not my favorite presentation of myself. I tried very hard not to, but I didn't have a chance. I've used up all the not cry I was issued at birth. Now it appears it's crying time. I talked to my mom briefly. I was afraid she'd be mad at me for messing up the life she'd given me, but she was very nice. She said a great thing. I told her I was miserable here, and she said, well, you were happy as a child. I can prove it. I have films. What went wrong between what she gave me and how I took it?
Day 8. Drama in Drug Ward 6. Irene got kicked out of the unit for smoking dope in her room. She offered some to Carol, the agent's wife, and Carol came to me crying and asked me what she should do. I told her we should turn Irene in, so we told Stan, the therapist who was on duty. Stan called Irene in, and she had this real defiant look on her face, like she'd been caught doing something noble for her country, and now she was going to be killed for it. Carol was crying, and I was sitting and holding her hand. Stan said, "Irene, we hear you've been smoking dope." Irene said, "Well, I didn't know where I was going to be when I moved out of here, if I was going to a halfway house or whatever, and I was confused, so I smoked dope." Stan said, "There are 1,000 excuses and finally no reasons to do drugs." Most of the people in here share the desire to seem cool. They can be aching from heroin withdrawal, but ask how they are, and they'll say, "Pretty good, man. Hanging in there." The answer comes too quickly and hovering over a grin. A look of desperation gazes across the abyss. The only thing worse than being hurt is everyone knowing that you're hurt. Day 11. The new people came out of detox today and joined our group. Marvin said he wasn't an alcoholic, but he likes it in here. He thinks all of us are interesting. It's like he's on a field trip for Psychology Today or a segment of Bloopers, Blumpers, and Bleepers where they send a healthy person to blend in with a ward full of addicts just to see if anyone notices. Wanda was in the hospital recovering from a suicide attempt, carbon monoxide in her car. She called her dealer to bring her heroin because she couldn't sleep. She overdosed in the hospital, so they just transferred her down here. Mark was brought in by his parole officer directly from Vacaville. He's 19 and looks like he's been on medication of some kind for most of his life. His blonde hair is greasy, parted down the middle, and he has very wild eyes. When he walks down the hallways, he hugs the walls, which Carl says is a prison thing. Mark has already been in jail 3 years for resisting arrest and assaulting a police officer, and now he's in a drug clinic. His father came in today to bring him some clothes. He seemed disappointed at the way Mark's turned out. My mom is probably sort of disappointed at how I turned out, but she doesn't show it. She came by today and brought me a satin and velvet quilt. I'm surprised I was able to detox without it. I was nervous about seeing her, but it went okay. She thinks I blame her for my being here. I mainly blame my dealer, my doctor, and myself, and not necessarily in that order. She didn't like my hair very much, but pretended to. She said it was interesting. She thinks my life would work better if I got a new business manager. She washed my underwear and left. In the last few years, I've become an accepted eccentric at best and a fuck-up at worst. I feel like I'll let people down if I take away the behavior they've grown accustomed to disapproving of. They try to discipline me, I refuse to be disciplined. They object, I'm objectionable. We all know exactly what to do. Julie talked to us today about the family and friends of the addict, the Al-Anons. She said they became very caught up in the whole downward spiral of watching the alcoholic slowly die. It can become their whole lives, addicted to addicts. It's like an Al-Anon jumps out the window and somebody else's life flashes in front of their eyes, said Sid. I wished I'd said that, but then I probably will. I keep thinking that if I could marry somebody, this would be less embarrassing. I'm so jealous of Carol because she has a husband. It makes it seem less final that she's here. It gives her something to go back to, someone to be with, and someone to be. I have no situation that requires me to be more than I am. It just seems like when you get two people together and one's in a suit and one's in a dress, how could they be unhappy? Unless their kid murdered another kid or something. I envy people who have the capacity to sit with another human being and find them endlessly interesting. I would rather watch TV. Of course, this eventually becomes known to the other person. I once told Jonathan that I would pay more attention to him if he got better programming. It always seems that in the beginning with someone, nothing they do could ever be wrong, except that they don't see you enough. And eventually it gets to the point where you just want to say, "Get off my leg, okay?" Oh, what's the difference? No one would marry me with this haircut anyway. Day 12. This boy Brian was checked in this morning by his mother and his aunt. He wore a red knit hat and stunk of beer. He was about 18 years old, and he did not want to be in a drug clinic. He had a concert to go to Wednesday night. They sent Carol and Bart and me to convince Brian to stay. He said that he was impressed that someone like me actually stayed in the clinic, and that he wanted to be an actor, but he couldn't be persuaded to stay.
He said he was too young to stop drinking and drugging. All his friends did it. He knew he was probably an alcoholic. He drank all day and smoked a lot of dope and did cocaine when he could get it. And he knew his brother had, in effect, died of it. Still, he couldn't handle what it meant to be in a drug unit. He wouldn't examine it. It was too heavy and it was definitely too hard. It couldn't be true, therefore it wasn't. So we split. The whole thing made me think. I used up so much energy explaining why I was late, why I didn't show up, how I wasn't really loaded, I was just tired, I had jet lag. Avoiding looking people in the eyes because I couldn't stand how I felt when I saw the disappointment in their faces. That ate up a lot of energy. If I could accept that I'm a drug addict, I could have all that energy back. So, I'm a drug addict. I guess we're allowed just so many drugs in one lifetime, and I've used up my coupon. From here on out, there's just reality. I think that's what maturity is, a stoic response to endless reality. But then what do I know? Day 13. This is not necessarily where I envisioned myself when I was young. I didn't stand up in school and say, my goal when I'm older is to be in a drug hospital, eating cafeteria food and watching The Outer Limits and fighting in group therapy and playing volleyball in the park and not dealing with my feelings. I talked to Thomas on the phone today. He said he's been trying to reach me, but the line is always busy. It's a payphone. Thomas sounded so calm, so okay, so not me. Somehow I absorbed the world's genetic horror while my brother inherited the sweetness and patience of someone who befriends birds. He's one of the few people who, when you ask how he is and he says fine, you don't question it. It reminds me of the scene in The Exorcist when the priest looks into the devil inside the possessed girl and cries, take me! And the devil leaves the girl and enters the priest. It's like I'm an exorcist taking all the darkness and letting it gather inside me, while Thomas absorbs, well, maybe not light, but certainly lighter colors. There's some sad buoyancy in him. He ambles and strolls, moving through life and smooth these emotions. I told him that the great thing about having me as a sister is that I make him look even better by supplying him with contrast. He said, the really great thing about having you as a sister is that you're the only adult I know that keeps a bowl of Tootsie Rolls for her guests. I don't know why, but this made me feel better. Sid said that drugs weren't the problem, life was the problem. Drugs were the solution. I think Sid has a crush on me. He gets me up in the morning by coming into my room and holding my feet until I'm totally awake. I like having my feet held, even if it is by Sid. Day 14. Today, Mark threatened Sid's life. Nobody quite knows what happened, but Mark was given Haldol, an antipsychotic. Now he has all this mung in the side of his mouth, and he looks wilder than ever. Carol and Wanda say they're going to put trash cans in front of their doors tonight because there are no locks in drug clinics. Carl's mad at me because I gave him $10 to shut up. He says I'm a spoiled movie actress and I don't know the first thing about real life. Maybe he's right. Sometimes I feel like I've got my nose pressed up against the window of the bakery. Only I'm the bread. Day 15. A lady came in today to beef up our spirituality, AA style. She told us a couple of great stories. First, she explained why people who bring us into AA are called Eskimos. There was this guy named Harvey sitting in a bar up in Alaska. Another guy, Tony, came into the bar and started talking to the bartender about God. Harvey says to Tony, do you believe all that stuff? Tony said, yeah, I do. And Harvey said, ugh, I tried that God stuff. It's a bunch of crock. Tony said, what do you mean? What happened? So Harvey said, well, I was in this really, really bad snowstorm. I mean, I'd been lost for days and I was dying. I was desperate. Finally, I dropped to my knees and prayed. I said, God, if you're up there, please get me out of here. Save me. So then Harvey stopped talking, so Tony said, well, what happened? And Harvey said scornfully, oh, nothing. An Eskimo came and got me out. Then she told us the story of how her first AA sponsor had gotten this horrible kind of cancer, and her sponsor believed in God. So this lady couldn't understand how she could believe in a God who would make her suffer like that. And her sponsor said, God never gives us any more than we can handle. So if he gives you a lot to handle, take it as a compliment. It's because he believes that you can handle a lot. It was such a powerful thought, I wanted to brand it into my brain. When I got back into my room, there were flowers from the guy who pumped my stomach. The note said he could tell that I was a very sensitive person. I'd have to be sensitive to need all that Percodan. I'm tempted to marry him just to be able to tell people how we met. Day 16. They brought a new guy in today, Alex. He's very good-looking in a Heathcliff sort of way. He had a seizure an hour ago. I didn't see it, but Sam said it was pretty amazing. Carl told me that Sam was in jail for rape. My reply was, oh. I casually asked Sam about it, and he said he was framed, that his friend had done it. I asked him what he did when he wasn't in jail, and he said he was a scalper. He told me he'd sold tickets to the concert of an ex-boyfriend of mine, as if to say, what a coincidence that we should finally meet. Sam is homophobic and hates Bart. He calls him Barf. Wanda told me she likes to be tied up and have her clothes torn off before sex. She said it really makes her happy. I don't know what makes me happy, but that doesn't ring a bell. Day 17. It struck me that the people that have had an impact on me are the people who didn't make it. Marilyn Monroe, Judy Garland, Montgomery Clift, Lenny Bruce, Janis Joplin, John Belushi. It's not making it to be Marilyn Monroe, but it is to me. In our culture, these people are heroes. There's something inside of that, a message that killing yourself like that isn't so bad. All the interesting people do it, the extraordinary ones. Weird, weird message. Most of the people I've admired in show business, comedians, writers, actors, are alcoholics or drug addicts or suicides. It's bizarre. And I get to be in that club now. It's the one thing I cling to in here. Wow. I'm hip now, like the dead people. Romancing the stoned. Day 18. Sid graduated today. There was a little ceremony to see him off and launch him back into the now like a little detoxed boat. It was actually sort of moving with all the junkies sitting in a circle of chairs in the television room. A coin was passed around and everybody held the coin and said something encouraging and wise, or at least tried to, for Sid to carry with him. I couldn't think of anything to say, so I sang, I've got to be me. Carol cried. I rarely cry. I save my feelings up inside me like I have something more specific in mind for them. I'm waiting for the exact perfect situation and then boom, I'll explode in a light show of feeling and emotion, a pinata stuffed with tender nuances and pent-up passions. Until then, though, no sobbing for Sid. I'll miss him holding my feet, though. I don't miss whole people usually. I mainly miss the things they do. The way they wear their hats, the way they squeeze my feet, the memory of all that. No, no. I wonder if I'll ever be able to cry, and what it could possibly be that would set me off. The image of Heathcliff looking over the moors holding Kathy's newly dead body, the memory of my father forgetting my 12th birthday, the sweetness of Sid holding my feet recalled one day in traffic. The new guy Alex may be good-looking, but he also seems like kind of an asshole. Day 19. Another new guy checked in tonight. He actually checked himself in, but not before he stopped at the bar in the building next door for a couple of drinks. He was in excellent spirits when he got here, and he was wearing a very festive Hawaiian shirt. His name is Ted. When he leaned down to sign the admission contract, a cocaine bottle fell out of his pocket. Whoops, he said, and giggled sheepishly as he retrieved the vial. My lucky cocaine bottle. Look, the spoon was handmade. It's bronze. Lucille, my favorite nurse, took it out of his hand and said, it's beautiful. He started explaining the history of this Coke spoon, and Lucille listened to him as if it was the most fascinating story about a Coke spoon she'd ever heard. He was still describing it as she steered him into his room. Carl watched all this with me. When they were out of earshot, he said, shoot, any Coke spoon was my lucky Coke spoon, as long as there was Coke on it. I love Carl. He's like a disc jockey from hell, and you can never change the station. His impact on people is undeniable. Alex literally perspires when Carl is around. I could swear Alex is deliberately not looking at me. He still hasn't said a word to me. Somehow I don't think I'm missing anything. Day 21. Alex did the most amazing thing today. Carol and I were coming out of her room and he was on the payphone talking real loud and weird, like a white version of Carl. He was saying something about Fox and first drafts, and as I passed him, I could hear a busy signal through the receiver. I barely made it around the corner before I burst out laughing. He must have been trying to impress us. Carol thinks he has a crush on me. Yeah, he probably does. He's exactly the type I would attract. Carol and I have started exercising every afternoon. She tells me how perfect her husband is, how adorable he is, and how happy they are. Finally, I said, "But, Carol, there must be something wrong with him." She sort of shrugged and said, "He works 16 hours a day. I only see him late at night, and on Sundays he stays home with me and reads scripts." Oh. Day 23. My inner world seems largely to consist of three rotating emotions: embarrassment, rage, and tension. Sometimes I feel excited, but I think that's just positive tension. Stan gave us a list of emotions today and told us to circle the ones we felt recently. I lied and circled 7. Mark refused to come to group today. He stayed in his room and listened to the Doors. He had his Walkman on so loud at breakfast we could hear the music through his nose. Marvin announced at lunch that he thought he might be an alcoholic. We all sang God Bless America. Day 24. Alex walked out of the group today. Stan had been on my back about my wonderful girl act. He said I didn't just want people to like me, but that I wanted to make an impact on their lives they'd never quite recover from. It wasn't a startling revelation. I've been in therapy since I was 19, so Stan is not likely to be giving me stunning insights into my being that I've never considered before. But he was trying. He said something about how I probably hoped people would mistake my nervousness for vivacity. I was about to make some glib comeback when Alex suddenly leapt to my defense. Stan slapped him down by saying, "Oh, and I guess you're hoping people will confuse your nervousness with aloof cool." Stan can really be a bastard. An addict made good, now he's a marathon runner. The junkie of the 70s is the athlete of the 80s. Anyway, Alex bolted to his room and refused to come out for our excursion to the mall. Carol tried to persuade him, but Stan told us to leave him alone. I feel bad for him. Shopping was hilarious. We went as a group of 10 and crawled all over the mall like a giant junkie spider. We bought popcorn, cotton candy, cola, and chocolate. Stan said I eat just like a heroin addict, but I break just like a little girl. It was hard to keep the group together. Sam wanted sunglasses, Wanda needed styling gel, and Carl ate 3 hot dogs. I'm really glad I overdosed now. If I hadn't, I never would have been in a rehab and shop with junkies. I wish Alex had come shopping instead of hiding in his room. I've never really talked to him, and he's been here for over a week. He just seems so tense. He doesn't seem to get that this is a serious thing. I do think I'm lucky in a way. I had a frightening thing happen. I had my stomach pumped. It was a fairly graphic illustration that my way wasn't working. If I had to have my stomach pumped the last time I took drugs, why should I think the next time I could take a normal amount? And just what is a normal amount of Percodan? Alex probably still thinks he can take a normal amount of cocaine. There but for the grace of overdose go I. Day 25. Alex left today. He and Stan had a fight and he marched out. I was in my room with my mother and suddenly from down the hall and behind his closed doors we heard him yelling, "Fuck you!" and so forth. I guess it's not a tremendous shock. He was never totally here to begin with. It's as though he came to leave. What a departure. It was almost operatic in its melodrama. It's always frightening when someone bolts back into the blue. I guess he hasn't been scared enough. Just because everyone else thinks he's hit bottom doesn't necessarily mean he has. Mom brought me some peanut butter cookies and a biography of Judy Garland. She told me that she thought my problem was that I was too impatient, my fuse was too short, that I was only interested in instant gratification. I said, "Instant gratification takes too long." The glib martyr. Day 27. They brought in 3 people to speak at the hospital tonight at our own AA meeting. The first guy told us he was known as the Blackout King. He used to come out of blackouts speeding down the freeway and not know if he was chasing someone or being chased. He once came to in the middle of a huge fight and didn't know whose side he was on. He said that in the end he could only get high by tying himself off and calling the paramedics and telling them there was an overdose at his address. Then he would hang up and wait until he heard this ambulance siren, and then he'd shoot up, knowing they would save his life. So almost dying became the biggest high of all. The second guy told us this long tale of cocaine dealing and prison. At one point, he was talking about being at this party in San Francisco. There was this girl there, and he said, I wanted to go out with her, and she didn't have the time of day for me. Then she went off to New York and became this big star, and today that girl is in this room. Now we're in the same club. I got this cold feeling inside because I suddenly realized he was talking about me. He was bragging that I once thought I was too good for him, but now I'm not so bloody fucking too good for him. They say around here that some are sicker than others. Well, I decided that somebody was sicker than somebody in this situation, and I didn't care if I had to be sicker than him just as long as I wasn't in his category. I never heard the third speaker because I walked out of the meeting. Alex is back. The story is that he checked into a hotel in the valley with a pound of cocaine. He'd done quite a bit of it when he thought he heard someone breaking into his room and he freaked out and spilled all the rest in the bathtub full of water. Something like that. Bart told me, and he tends to exaggerate a little. Anyway, then he got in the elevator to get some more coke, and there were these people who laughed at him and said something to him about Florida. So Alex freaked out and went back into his room and called Julie. On the way back to my room, I stopped to see how Alex was. He was in bed, and Lucille was taking his blood pressure. He looked like those little pictures of kidnapped victims that they send to the families with ransom notes. He was pretending to be asleep, so I didn't say anything. Day 28. I can't really believe I'm actually going home in 2 days. I'm not completely leaving, though. They said I could continue coming during the day for all of next week. I'll be an outpatient. Bart is going to do that, too. So now I'll get the best of both worlds. It's hard to imagine a day without Carl talking too much in it. I wonder if he'd do my answering machine message for me. Today was Mark's 20th birthday. His favorite gift was the Big Mac that Stan brought him. Day 29. At lunch, Wanda said to me, God, I really envy you being in all those movies. You really have it all. I like the concept of being envied by someone in a drug clinic while actually in a drug clinic. Sometimes I don't think I was made with reality in mind. And now I can look forward to an eternal, open-ended reality that dreams me without waking. Unrelieved reality. Some might call it a challenge, others a sentence. Whatever you call it, though, we here in the rehab, the newly clean and sober, belong to it as completely as slaves. Reality's puppies. Nomads, yes men, kings. Day 30. I spent the morning in the park with Alex. He's not a bad guy, really. But he's not a great guy, really, either. He did push me in the swing for a very long time, though. There are two things that I know for certain guys are good for: pushing swings and killing insects. It's such a bizarre scene in my mind. The guy junkie is pushing the girl junkie in this little kiddie swing with all these little kids squealing and running around with their mothers sitting on the benches watching. All those little children and two huge ones. Alex told me he's writing a script about the clinic. Being here is probably the most colorful thing that ever happened to him. He should call it rehab, just when you thought it was safe to go back into your coke vial. I can't wait to drive. Maybe I'll go to the movies tonight. I heard Doctor's Orders was pretty good. Anyway, I've enjoyed writing this journal. Maybe I should start keeping one at home. It would have to be good, though, in case they publish it after my death. Sid and I are going to an AA dance in the valley on Thursday. Maybe I'm going overboard, but what the hell? I must be brainwashed, because it feels so clean when I think. A banquet of crumbs. Did you hear the one about the Polish starlet who came to Hollywood, she said? She slept with all the writers. Yeah, I know that one, he said. I love it. Before I forget, I've always thought you had a tremendous quality. I loved you in Mist on the Lake, particularly that scene where you were standing on the cliff in that diaphanous dress and all that hair just staring. I gotta tell you, I got hard. And not from your cleavage, from your performance. I mean, you were even good in Porky's Nerds, and I would have said that was impossible. So, I mean, we're not talking Pia Zadora here. You've got good chops. How did a smart girl like you wind up acting? My shrink Norma says it had something to do with not getting enough affection as a child, she said. So I'm trying to make up for it by getting as much attention as I can now. That's why I have a very seductive nature. Because, you know, you go off on a lot of calls and you meet people for a brief period of time, and it's important to cram your entire personality into that meeting so they'll really want you for the job. Even after you get successful, it never gets any easier. You always have to please people, fill their every possible fantasy about you. And you can never show it's hard, so you're always looking like you're having the best time, and everybody thinks they're your soulmate, and you don't feel comfortable with anybody. I know just what you mean, he said. For years, I went to hookers because, well, let's face it, I'm a very successful producer and writer, and I'm thinking of directing. Columbia really wants me to do a picture for them and direct it, and I feel it's the right time. I mean, I'm certainly developing films I feel I could direct. There's this one about high school that... Anyway, I've been doing this for a while now, and people might like me for my money. So I figured, if someone's going to like me for my money, it might as well be a hooker who's going to like me for my money anyway. I've noticed that people who admit they're lonely and angry tend to clump together, he said. Like that's enough of a common denominator, a little club of dissatisfied people filled with angst. Phi Beta Rage. Phi Beta Rage, he said. I'm stealing that. When you first meet someone on that first date, all the emergency adrenaline is there, he said. You bring out your best material as though you do it all the time, as though this is just a natural environment for the great parts of your personality to come through. And it's not. It's totally forced. I went out with the senator, she said, who kept saying, "You are so terrific. What a great girl you are." And I thought, well, shut up about it. He was telling me what he thought I needed to hear rather than what he really felt to be true. And if he really felt it to be true, I would know. I would be able to glean that he thought that. Anyway, I know I'm a terrific girl. I don't want to be a terrific girl. That's what I am for auditions. I want to be something else to someone. I envy people meeting me for the first time, he said. That first meeting is everything because I can watch their eyes and see it all happen, and I want to be them. I want to meet somebody like me. What I do, she said, is as soon as I know they're devoted, I start to find fault with them, really. It's the sleeping giant in my system who wakes up with a fee-fi-fo-fum and says, "Ugh, look at that hair," or, "Oh, my God, did you hear that stupid thing he said?" The sleeping giant who knows no pity is hungry for faults. He hunts them like Easter eggs. But the giant does this. I like them. I feel bad that the giant is going to do it. There's something in me that wants to warn them, "Please don't be stupid," like people can help it. And then the giant says, "Well, he's not good enough." And the thing is, the sleeping giant doesn't, but I truly care about people. Now, sometimes I don't show compassion. I mean, I walk around with it. I'm devastated when teams lose in sports. I want to kill myself when they show the faces of the losing team. I know how it feels. I mean, I can barely squash bugs unless I feel directly threatened. The only way to become intimate for me is repeated exposure, she said. My route to intimacy is routine. I establish a pattern with somebody, and then I notice when they're not there. To me, it's finding yourself in everybody, he said, but not enough of you to stay with any one person. I'm looking for myself, and I find me everywhere, just not enough to make a difference. I don't know what I want to find anymore, she said. I've gotten so involved in searching. I've done it for so long, it does me. Now I'm just into looking, not finding, winning, not the prize. That's why the sweetness of the sexual contact is perfect, but it can only be a disappointment afterwards, because all you wanted to do was get there, not be there. All you wanted was to want, not to have. As soon as you fuck, it's over. As soon as you fuck. Remember at our last session when you said that maybe I shouldn't date for a while until we'd worked more on my awareness in this area? Well, how long do you think for a while is? Not that I've been dating, but I just wondered how long till you think it's okay. I mean, I know it's not okay yet. I haven't been dating. But I did go out with somebody. Three times. I tried to call you. Well, I wanted to call you, but you were out of town. So I figured there wouldn't be any big harm in going on a little date. The thing is, he's another interesting guy, and that's what I'm drawn to. I know boring men are the ones to go for, but all I can see is the light glinting off the edges of the interesting ones. And of course, interesting means problems. I don't even think this time it's going to be different anymore. I think this time it'll be the same in a different way. Anyway, my friend Andrea set me up with him. He's a producer, very successful and attractive and all that. I met him for dinner and we had a nice time. He's very intense. Between him and me, there isn't a whole lot of dead air. The thing about this guy is I found him not dissimilar to me. We have a similar attack, similar appetites. Well, he's more into the sexual appetite thing. I've never been good in that area, as you know. I always feel like I'm out of my element. I don't know what I'm doing there. Every time I'm in sex, I feel like, how did I end up here? That's why I like to avoid it as much as possible. So I met him, and we had dinner, and I really felt like he understood me. Or at least he might if he ever stopped talking. We had a nice time, and then he wanted me to see his house.
I
guess I should have known.
And I didn't even have contraception. I mean, what was I going to do? Wear my diaphragm to the restaurant? It's so embarrassing when they know you knew it was going to be sex. It's like sometimes I try to be contemporary and modern, and on some level I just don't agree with anything I'm doing.
So I told him I wasn't comfortable having sex with people I just met, and he seemed to get it. He said, why don't you stay the night?
I wish you'd been here last week, because maybe if I had talked to you, you might have helped me not to have sex with him. I couldn't seem to not have sex with him on my own. I need people to encourage me not to. Could we just work real hard in this area, saturate ourselves with work on this, like when they stepped up bombing and escalated the war in Vietnam? In the parking lot at the hotel a few days later, I ran into this film editor, Evelyn Ames, who I've known from parties for years. This is a real wild girl, and she enjoys her reputation, or at least she keeps up the pretense that she does. Somebody has to enjoy her reputation beside the guys. So we went to lunch, and in the course of talking to her, I mentioned that I'd met this guy, Jack Burroughs. His name is Jack Burroughs. And I sort of asked if she'd ever slept with him. I don't know her well, but she's someone you don't have to know that well in order to ask something like that. She said, yeah, I slept with him. She asked me, did he make you do this? And she drew her knees back over her head right there at the table, and I said, no. And I thought, if that's the only way he demonstrated his respect for me, I guess that's something. She also said that while he was with her, he talked about another girl he was going to fly in from Boston who had really soft skin. He rubbed her skin and talked about this other girl's skin. Then she said that she had, in fact, seen him quite recently. It turned out she'd been with him Monday night after he'd been with me Monday afternoon. I thought, God, this girl is a lot of girl. And to need two lots of girls in one day is... Well, the phrase out of control did cross my mind. Then, when I got home, I got a call from my business manager, Charlie, who wanted to know if it was true that I was dating this guy. I said, well, I would hardly call it dating. Why do you ask? And he said a friend of his had gone out with this guy Tuesday night and that he told her he was seeing me. So that was 3 in 2 days or something. And those are just the ones I heard about. Imagine what I could pick up about him if I got one of those satellite dishes. I wanted to call him and tell him never to call me again, but there was still part of me that cherished the hope that this would make him sorry and make him realize how much he loves me and what he'll be missing if he doesn't marry me. I feel like a total jerk for thinking this, but it's like I've been genetically tampered with. I was born imagining myself with an apron on, with pies cooling on the windowsill and babies crying upstairs. I thought that all that stuff would somehow anchor me to the planet, that it was the weight I needed to keep me from just flying off into space. So I called him up and tried to make a little joke about the situation, and he jumped on me. He said, well, this is like the pot calling the kettle black. Implying that just because I've slept with these two other people he knows over a period of 5 years, and because I slept with him on the morning after our first date, I'm some kind of slut. So we had this huge fight, and he accused me of having initiated the whole sex thing with him in the first place, and I said, oh, well, if I initiated it, then I'm stopping it right now. And I hung up. When he didn't call me back, I decided to call him and tell him not to even think about ever calling me again. His machine was on, and he had a one-word message that said, slut! Well, I freaked out. I mean, I knew it wasn't just about me. It was about every woman he's ever been with, and I was lumped in there somewhere. I was so shaken, I can't describe it to you. I imagined him dead, and I left him a message in a very cold voice. But then he called back the next morning, and he said that his message didn't say slut. It said, what? And then I thought, maybe I made this whole thing up. He asked me out to lunch, and I said I couldn't come. I told him I had low self-esteem, not no self-esteem. Then he called me that night and joked about how we'd broken up. He asked me what I was wearing, and I told him I had on a huge ball gown with bowling shoes and a scuba mask and a red wig and no underwear. We were very funny, and it was like it was new again, only it hadn't had that much time to get old. But it had gotten old. We had taken it to its illogical conclusion, but it wasn't finished. On Sunday afternoon, he called to ask if he could come over that night and watch this award show with me, and I said, okay. I was still keeping a little bit cool, which I'm sure attracted him. He can't resist people who can resist him. So he came over, and we heated up food badly together, and he said he'd missed me, and it was great. So he slept over again, and we had some sex. This time, though, he got away with a shatteringly low amount of foreplay. In fact, he told me this joke. What is Irish foreplay? It's when the guy says, "Brace yourself, Bridget." Then he wanted us to stay in bed all morning, but I had to come here. The thing is, I hope I'm not pregnant because I have a feeling I could get pregnant easily. I mentioned this to him, and he said he wouldn't mind going to the abortion with me if I was. I guess that's how guys are thoughtful in the 80s. They accompany girls to their abortions. What worries me is, what if this guy is really the one for me, and I just haven't had enough therapy yet for me to be comfortable with having found him? How long do you think this whole process is going to take? You think maybe we should have double-length sessions? It's like, not only am I changing seats in the Titanic, I'm dating the crew. I was at Helena's Friday night, and I saw George there, he said. He was so cold to me, I couldn't believe it. Who were you at Helena's with, she said. I don't think... I'm just telling you about George, he said. I don't think that that matters. It's not that it matters, she said. Look, we've known each other for 3 months. I know you don't see me exclusively. We've gone over that. Who are you with? Well, you'll probably hear about it anyway, he said. Charlene Hasselhoff. The girl from television, she said? The television actress? Yeah, he said. Really, she said. I wouldn't have thought you'd go out with somebody from television. Actually, I normally wouldn't, he said. I find it a very limited medium, as you know. But it turns out she's bright. She's almost as... No, I would have to say she's just as bright as you are. Is she funny, she said. Well, he said, she's not as funny as you, but she is funny. Yeah, she's funny. I mean, I was very surprised. Why would you tell me this, she said. Why would you tell me this? What do you mean, he said. You asked me. I thought you'd want to know that there was another smart girl out there. Why, she said. Why would you think that I would want to know that? What is it about me that looks like I would want to know that there are other smart, pretty girls? Because I'll fix it. I'll change it. Is it something I'm wearing? Is my lip curled in a certain way that says, gotta tell her that there's another bright woman around? Why would you think that I would want to know that a beautiful, gorgeous, supermarket-famous face from television is as bright and funny as I am? I didn't say she was as bright.